First, think of the humble Cheeto. Cheesy, crispy, salty, powdery, and processed. Bon Appetit pastry chef Claire Saffitz attempted to reverse engineer and recreate a gourmet version of the popular snack.
They're so good. They're very cheesy, so crunchy. Is this what I've been missing for the last 25 years of my life? And these are flaming hot. Oh my God, look at the color. Ooh, not found in nature.
It's a safe bet to put Cheetos in the junk food category, but do we know whether processed foods like this are actually bad for us, and if so, how bad? George Zidane says it's hard to say, so maybe don't beat yourself up about indulging from time to time. George Zidane is a science communicator, television and web host, and producer. He created National Geographic's web series Ingredients. His first book is called Ingredients, The Strange Chemistry of What We Put In Us and On Us. George, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, George, a weird question to start with. A lot of times we ask guests to check their levels by asking what they had for breakfast in the morning. Given the subject of your book, I'm really curious. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had my usual breakfast, which is, believe it or not, just a cup of coffee and nothing else.
Okay. Now, coffee is one of the topics of your book. And one of the kind of organizing principles and inspiring ideas here is, how do we evaluate the health impact of any of all the zillions of different things we eat or put on us and things like that? Can you talk about what you were shooting for here?
Yes. So I'll give you a really short answer and then a longer answer. The super short answer is it's hard. It's really hard to evaluate the long-term impact of food on our health. The longer answer is, you know, it's specifically when it comes to processed food, which is where I kind of start the book, mm-hmm. but, you know, we talk about other stuff too, but you know, there's sort of a layer cake of reasons of why it's difficult. The first layer in the cake is it's actually kind of hard to define what you mean by processed. And in order to study something scientifically, you do have to define it, because if you're going to do a study based on, you know, that's looking at processed food, at some point someone's going to have to go to the grocery store and buy the things for your study, right? So you need to know what exactly you're defining as processed food. The second layer in the layer cake of why it's hard is that a lot of times with food and long-term studies like this, so things that last 5, 10, 15 years or even longer, it's actually fairly hard to measure accurately what people are eating. and that's because it's hard to remember what you ate. Like you asked me what I, you know, had for breakfast this morning, and that was a fairly easy answer.
That was an easy one.
Yeah, but like if I were to ask you what you had for dinner 2 weeks ago or 2 months ago, or to average your consumption of, let's say, cantaloupes over the last 4 months, it would be a fairly challenging question for you to answer. Unless you happen to know exactly how many cantaloupes you eat every single day.
I don't. Zero most days, honestly.
Zero, yeah. There you go. Yeah. And then the sort of the third layer cake. Yeah, the third layer in the cake is once you get that sort of that data back from people, if you, depending on the way you analyze it, and there are many different ways to analyze that data, you could come out with literally the exact opposite results. And you see that in the headlines. And coffee is a perfect example. If you search for like coffee and heart disease risk over the past three decades, you will see headlines that line up on both sides of the issue exactly the opposite. Some say, you know, coffee will increase your risk of heart disease. Others say coffee will reduce your risk of heart disease. And so, you know, the temptation with that is like, well, okay, if science is saying, you know, both things, then I'm just going to like ignore it and move on with my life because science clearly doesn't know what it's talking about. And that's actually not true. Depending on how you analyze data and depending on loads of other factors, you can actually get different results. And the way science progresses is, you know, you do not just one study, right? You do a bunch of studies over time. People have debates, arguments. They write to each other in scientific journals and say, you know, you're wrong because X. And then eventually over a long period of time, you do get to a consensus. So with coffee, for example, roughly 3 years ago, the largest and sort of most detailed analysis of the long-term impacts of coffee on your health was published. And it seems to say, I'm happy to report, that there are very few bad health impacts from coffee. The only exception being, if you're pregnant, you want to limit your caffeine intake roughly to about a cup of coffee a day. But, you know, the scary headlines from the very, very early days where it said, you know, coffee is going to increase your risk of a heart attack by 30%, those seem to have been disproven.
One thing that makes it even trickier is the correlation or causation argument. So
yes,
if we have people eating a bunch of, say, brand name cheesy puffs of some sort, and they have worse health outcomes than everybody else, is it because of the cheesy puffs, or is that just a marker that they may be in a certain demographic, age group, or they may also do certain behaviors that go along with that? That makes it even harder to tease this stuff out, right?
Absolutely. You totally hit the nail on the head with that one. And that's part of the big debate between these two groups is you've got one group saying, like, you know, that data is known in the field as observational data. And the counterpoint to that is the data that you get out of a randomized controlled trial. So the observational data is what it sounds like. You're following people over time. You're not trying to change their behavior. You're just getting them to tell you what they ate. And then you're associating that or correlating that with, let's say, bad health outcomes. On the other side of the coin, the randomized controlled trial, which was considered the gold standard in medicine, is you actually split people up into different groups. You give one group a certain treatment or food or whatever. You don't give it to the other group. And then you compare the results at the end of that trial. You know, at the time of writing of this book, there was exactly one randomized controlled trial that compared ultra-processed food versus minimally processed food in a healthy group of people. And that maybe is surprising to folks because they might think, like, oh, you know, science is clear. Like, we really know ultra-processed food is bad for you, et cetera, et cetera. But, just one randomized controlled trial at this point. And it did indicate that if you eat more ultra-processed food, you do put on weight. But the trial was a month long, and there's only so much that you can discover in a month. Like, a month-long trial is not going to tell you, does it increase your risk of a heart attack or diabetes, right? So there's all these, you know, science is a puzzle. You've got randomized controlled trials, you've got observational data, you've got animal models, you've got all kinds of other stuff, and trying to put that puzzle together and get a complete picture is really, really tough.
We're talking to George Zeidan. His new book is called Ingredients, The Strange Chemistry of What We Put in Us and on Us. It sounds hopeless, George, but on the other hand, we figured out to stop using formaldehyde to preserve milk. We stopped making energy drinks with radium in them. And we figured out, despite all these complexities, that smoking is bad for us. Can you talk about when we can, with certainty, say, yeah, this thing, this habit, this whatever, we shouldn't be doing it?
Yes, and that's a great point. So for the things like formaldehyde and radium, those will usually have a pretty quick impact on your health. And that's true of poisons in general, you know, cyanide or whatever. Like, it's very clear that cyanide is bad for you because it has a immediate and dramatic impact on your health. For things like smoking, you know, you can smoke a cigarette and you're not going to keel over immediately, right? So it's not as obvious that they're bad for you. And this was a big part of the argument back in the 1940s, 50s, when this really was unknown still. So what you have to do there is exactly the observational trials I was talking about before. Is you take, you know, you've got groups of people and you follow them over a long, long period of time. You ask them how much they smoke, and then you correlate the results. And when it comes to something like smoking, first of all, the trials were enormous. Even in 1964, a total of 1 million people had been in these observational trials. And second of all, the results were dramatic. I mean, you had people – so on average, if you smoke your entire life, your life expectancy is roughly 10 years shorter than if you don't smoke. And furthermore – the more you smoke, the greater the impact on your life. So those kind of dramatic results were part of the puzzle that really convinced the Surgeon General to unequivocally state back in 1964, and we still know this is true today, that smoking causes lung cancer and definitely does take a substantial number of years off of your life. And by the way, since 1964, we now have a much better picture of the actual chemistry behind how it does that. First, we figured out that it does do that, and then afterwards, in the intervening years, we figured out what the sort of molecular basis of why smoking is bad for you and why it increases your risk of lung cancer so much.
Let's bring things home as we wrap up, George, to the processed foods that started you on this adventure here. Research is still being done. I assume it will continue to be done. The state of the art right now, what do we mean by processed foods, and should we throw them all away? Should we eat them with abandon? Where are we right now on that?
Well, you've laid out a good spectrum, right? my personal feeling is we're in the early stages of research on ultra-processed food. I would wait a little bit longer before moving to either end of that spectrum. I think you're okay if you're somewhere in the middle. That's kind of where I plan to be.
George, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's George Zidane, executive producer at the American Chemical Society. He's the author of the new book, Ingredients, The Strange Chemistry of What We Put In Us and On Us.